Hello, I'm Phil Minor. Welcome to our grand tour of all things cycling and cycling culture.
Behind the Bike Shed on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Hello, it's time to celebrate all things cycling here on Cambridge 105. Coming up in today's programme, who's paying for what when it comes to a big cash boost for cycling infrastructure here in Cambridgeshire? We talk about Cambridgeshire cyclists and what they can expect to see delivered. And our guest on a bicycle this week is someone who wants to share their story of how cycling helped them get through a life-threatening illness.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
We're Zooming again this week in line with the current Cambridge 105 policy for social distancing. So patiently waiting, and I'm delighted to say from behind their own bike sheds are Councillor Aidan van der Weyer, who is a South Cambridgeshire District Councillor for Orwell and Barrington. He also has a few other offices, which he shall explain to us, no doubt. Anna Williams, a regular communications and community officer for CAM Cycle, that's the Cambridge Cycling Campaign. Kate Sanders, who is a member of Cambridge Cycling Club, and perhaps more importantly, in these current times, frontline NHS cardiac physiologist. Gabrielle Bienzobras Mariessa, and I'm not sure he'll correct me on that, he does every time, another regular, lifelong sporting cyclist and everyday cyclist, and more importantly, I suspect, you're much of a family cycling man now, aren't you?
I mean, I've been mostly family cycling these last 4 weeks, 8 weeks, or how long we've been doing this.
I've seen lockdown. And your daughters are covering even greater distances, aren't they?
Yeah, they haven't been best pleased, I could have said.
So, Councillor Aidan, thank you so much for joining us. Now, there's lots of money floating about for cycling in the whole of the UK, we're told. Now, of course, here in Cambridgeshire, we want to know specifically, have we got that much money coming our way? And if so, who from?
So, one of the upsides of COVID is people are realising quite how important cycling can be, and how what benefits there are to cycling. So the government has allocated quite a lot of money for doing some really short-term cycling improvements. We don't yet know exactly how much money we're going to be getting in Cambridgeshire. There is already quite a lot of investment going on in Cambridgeshire in cycling. So the main thing is actually less about the money at the moment than getting everybody agreed on what we need to do, and political support and community support and business support for the improvements that we can make, because there's just so much potential already. Cambridge is a wonderful cycling place, but we can do so much more.
You have quite a few parishes, don't you, come under your umbrella for your ward?
Yes, so my ward has 5 parishes, lots of people cycling. It's really, really noticeable at the moment, but at election times, cycling is one of the things that people ask about, even in the small villages. You want to be able to get to school, get to college, get into town, get to work by bike. So the potential is almost as big in the countryside as it is in the city.
Now, you're also a member of Greater Cambridge Partnership. Could you explain to listeners who perhaps have heard about it but not sure where that fits within the umbrella of local government?
Yeah, so local government in Cambridgeshire is really complex. You've got South Cambridge District Council, Cambridge City Council, and then you've got the Cambridgeshire County Council. Those three organisations have come together to do a deal with government that is now called the Greater Cambridge Partnership. That's focusing mainly on public transport infrastructure, cycling infrastructure, and also some skills and housing things. And then above all that, we've now got the mayor and the combined authority, which also has some powers about transport policy. So what's really important when we're thinking about the improvements is making sure that all of these organisations are working together. And so in my role, for example, I've got to be making sure that I'm in contact with all the different organisations on the different committees getting things coordinated and making sure everybody's getting the standards right and working to the same strategy and with the same aims.
Now, Cambridgeshire is a big county, and there's lots of settlements. I mean, even South Cambridgeshire, there's a lot of settlements which are long distance between each other. How's this money? I mean, it's not going to go very far, really, is it?
No. And so we've got to do some prioritisation. So in the case of the rural cycling, the Greater Cambridge Partnership has got plans for 12 greenways, which is a radiating out from Cambridge into the countryside to the main settlements, Fulbourne, Waterbeach, Comberton, Melbourne, that's just a few of them. And then that's the sort of basis of then a network of cycling out. And then complementing that within Cambridge City, there's quite a lot of interventions that we're doing, smaller projects, and there's big projects like the Chisholm Trail, for example, which is a really fabulous, going to be a off-road route, almost entirely off-road route from the north of Cambridge to right down to the south, linking up lots of places on the way.
Anna, you've got a councillor here, and it's obvious that he's pro-cycling, which is good. I suspect he is. I'm obviously putting words
absolutely,
in his mouth.
Absolutely.
Anna, you've had time now, a week or so, to digest this news that there's big money coming, allegedly, to our way. What is it you and your members would love to see delivered, and wish list do you think is the most urgent?
Well, I think the money that's been announced for the Greater Cambridge Partnership, that's brilliant. I mean, as Aidan says, some of that is going into big projects that have already underway. I mean, the greenways, there's a lot of work still to do on those. We've kind of had the planning, but we've got to actually deliver them. The Chisholm Trail is still being built. There's lots of exciting things there. We've got the bridge, Abbey Chesterton Bridge is kind of on the building site now and kind of had new bits put on this week. But actually, more urgent than that, really, than those big long-term projects is the short-term situation, which has completely changed recently because of the coronavirus and the needs we have from that to firstly obviously keep people safe now as we tackle the pandemic, but also to look at the best way to rebuild our community, our economy, to work together sort of for the future. And really we're waiting for money, for more money. I mean, the government a couple of weeks ago, they promised £250 million for temporary schemes. And I believe some of that has still not come through. Mayor James Palmer has been sort of lobbying the government recently for that money to come through. But we really need to deliver a network of temporary schemes so that we can keep people safe when they're walking and cycling, make sure there's enough space for people walking and cycling, and also like build on the increased cycling levels which are happening
now. Anna, you just mentioned temporary schemes, and they have started to put some in already, but not everyone's a happy bunny about this. And I did actually see Gabrielle's post on social media a couple of days ago about one in his neighborhood. Gabrielle, you do have some concerns, don't you? Do you want to share those?
I think Anna probably agrees, and I know Roxanne does agree. So I think,
sorry, I've just had to explain. Roxanne is one of Anna's colleagues at Canada.
Sorry, yes, that's fine. So, I mean, I'm all for these temporary schemes, but I mean, the issue is that the lanes that they put up, first of all, they're just the advisory lanes. Some of them next to already existing either set paths or mandatory cycle lanes. The problem is they're very narrow, and advisory lanes have got a really poor reputation. I mean, in Belgium, they call murder streets for some reason.
Sorry, we just got rumpled over there by Zoom. What did you call it?
Murder strips.
A murder strip. Oh, that's...
Yeah, that's how they call them in Belgium. That's right. So, I mean, the reason for that is because people do not respect them. And in fact, I went on the evening they've been put up, they've been painted, and I went, I took some photos, and as I was taking the photos, cars were already driving on top of them. The mandatory ones, which supposedly you're not supposed to drive over them, and the advisory ones that you can. So I'm worried. I mean, that kind of setting is more to be used in a very, maybe in a cul-de-sac or somewhere where there's no very not a lot of through traffic, but they're putting that kind of advisory cycle lane on a major route, actually, because Milton, unfortunately, is open to the A10 traffic who wants to cut into the A14, as you well know, Phil. You know, people want to ride those bikes, but if you're going to go out and you're going to experience people close passing you, I mean, for a new cyclist, it's quite daunting, I think. So I think, you know, these cycle lanes are giving you a false sense of security.
I think you've put that very well, actually. Councillor, you were listening to that, I noticed. You know, this is going to be a big problem, isn't it? Because Cambridgeshire, particularly the villages, actually in your, particularly where you are, this is going to be a massive problem. And to add to what Gabrielle just spoken about, I suspect there's also going to be issues, because there's going to be some places, I know, maybe the busy places, where there's just not going to be any room for a cycle place.
Absolutely. It's a really serious problem that we are... What has been done in the sort of last few days and the program that the county council announced it needs to be just the start. Obviously, in the medium longer term, the projects that we're doing, we've been planning, they're all about getting segregated infrastructure where cyclists can really feel safe and don't need to worry about interacting with other vehicles. So that's the aim. Obviously, when you're wanting to do something really quickly, it's going to inevitably be less satisfactory. And I don't know the details, because it's a different bit of the council setup that's been running these, but this sort of feedback from the cycling groups and from users is really crucial in making sure that all of us who are involved in implementing these make them better, get them right, and do what is needed to as Gabrielle very clearly says, make people want to cycle. Because the transport system is going to collapse if everybody who was using buses and trains now starts using cars. It's just not going to work. And the cycling is absolutely the answer to this. What we've been doing now is the start. This sort of debate is absolutely crucial in getting getting it as good as we can. There will always be problems along the way. I don't know particularly about what. This issue about the types of cycle lanes. These are being done on temporary, slightly different permit system to most infrastructure, temporary permits. There is also some experimental work that we're doing as well that should be a bit better. There's a balance between getting something done straight away and getting something done slightly better quality. But this discussion is absolutely crucial.
Well, we're going to carry on with discussion. But before we go, we're going to have a slight break coming up. Anna, I've just actually listened to what both Gabrielle said and the councillors just said. The first time you're on your bicycle, if you have a dodgy experience just because of infrastructure, surely you're just going to think, I'm not going to try this again.
Well, I think that's the issue. I mean, there are a lot of new people, they're trying cycling for the first time. As the roads get busier, you know, if all they've got is one of these narrow murder strips, as they're called, that's not going to encourage them to carry on cycling sort of outside leisure reasons for maybe going to work or whatever. And I think obviously it's right that there's a sense of urgency. We need to do these as quickly as possible. But you know, they still have to be a certain quality. I think if you look around the country, there's been lots of councils already experimenting. Leicester, for example, a month ago, they already sort of coned off some lanes for cycle lanes using cones and water-filled barriers, which sort of provide a physical barrier between those people cycling and the fast moving to traffic. So we should be looking at the best practice from around the country. The councils should also be looking to their own expertise, and they haven't even consulted their own cycling officers for these schemes. I mean, they've got that expertise in-house, so they should be consulting those cycling officers, and they should also be working again with Camp Cycle and other groups. They worked with us earlier in the month for a list of suggestions, because we were sort of gathering those from around the community. We gathered over 150 suggestions as part of our Spaces to Breathe campaign, and that's from all over Cambridgeshire, not just Cambridge, Huntingdon, St Ives, St Neots, all across Cambridgeshire. So we just need to continue that collaboration and make sure whatever's put in is suitable and it is actually going to work to get people.
So, okay, I think Zoom we had a slight little breakdown there. Thank you, Anna. That was brilliant. Hey, very exciting start, isn't it? You've hit the ground running here, everyone. We're going to take a short break, and then when we come back, we're going to meet this week's guest on a bike, and we're going to play Spin That Wheel, and we're going to carry on this conversation a little bit later, and we're going to bring in our star act, Key Worker. Yes, Key Worker Kate. She's going to be chatting about her cycling experience and maybe get to chat a little bit about what's happening on the front line with the NHS.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Behind the Bike Shed with Phil Minot on Cambridge 105 Radio.
So while today's guest, studio guest, well, Zoom studio guest, shall we say, Councillor Aidan van der Weyer, Anna Williams and Kate Sanders and Gabrielle Bienzobers, well, while they take themselves a well-earned rest, having a refreshment of some sort, we are now going to meet today's guest on a bicycle. It's Sir Christopher Hayworth. And he's someone who wants to share with us his story of how cycling helped him get through a life-threatening illness.
Behind the Bike Shed on Cambridge 105 Radio.
So, Christopher, much appreciated you finding the time to join us. And I have to apologise because I've known you 10 years and I had no idea that you were a sir and I had no idea that you're a baronet as well. Which, as I have to say, it sort of displays my ignorance, and I guess it also displays what a humble person you are.
Well, yes, it's something that's happened fairly recently, actually. My father died in the beginning of September, and so I inherited the title from him. It originally came from my great-grandfather, who was a junior Lord of the Treasury under Asquith. He was a Liberal MP, so he was the first baronet, and since my father's death, I'm now the fourth baronet.
So, for people who hadn't had the chance to Google such things as I just did, a baronet, that's not quite a baron, is it? Is that right?
No, it's the lowest of the low, really, as far as hereditary titles are concerned.
No. I'm the lowest.
it's the sort of the lowest rank, if you like, of hereditary title.
We won't dwell on that because I know it's not something you sort of, you like to carry on.
Nope. Yes.
Thank you. But I have to say, I think that's going to be quite a handy title to have once we get out of lockdown and you turn up at a coffee shop on a Sunday on your bicycle because you can get the fun of it, I'm sure. Now, before we chat about what you actually kindly contacted me to say, I really want to chat about this, Phil. Can I get on your program, please? Before we chat about that, what I'd like to ask you, all your career, you have been in commercial property, haven't you, really? Development and some very interesting projects. Over your career within property, how important has cycling infrastructure become when you're working with a developer to plan a new business park, for example?
Well, I think, I suppose when I first started out, it probably wasn't really very high up on the agenda at all. But certainly over the last 5 to 10 years, it's become more important because employers are looking for the sort of facilities their staff want to be able to get to work, and cycling has become more important. I think actually that I'm involved in a big business park now, which is 160 acres near Stowmarket. And certainly the cycling infrastructure will be very important there. And I think really that probably what has happened with the latest lockdown and the pandemic, it's made more and more people interested in cycling. So I can see that it's going to become more and more important as we move forward, as we come out of the lockdown, looking to see as part of the sustainability agenda of buildings, obviously the cycling infrastructure is extremely important as well.
So do you think it will become more, is it more of a priority now, whereas before some people might suggest that perhaps a few developers have used cycling more as a tool to get planning, but now presumably from what you're saying, it's going to become more essential if you want to get the tenants there because their staff will be demanding cycle infrastructure?
Well, I think they will. And I think to an extent, there's been a bit of a focus on providing the cycling infrastructure, but it hasn't really, in some cases, it hasn't been very well used, which has been, I suppose, a frustration for developers. I think actually that is what's going to change. It really will start to be much better used now.
Oh, that's a really good thing, isn't it? Now, I'm going to move on to the reason why we are now speaking. You mentioned last September when your father died, and I'm just realising that must have been a horrific time for you because you also had another major drama in your life, didn't you? Which is the reason why we're going to be chatting now.
Yes, I did. It was absolutely the same time my father died and also the arrival of my first grandchild, funnily enough. But I noticed what I thought was a swollen gland in my neck and did nothing about it for about 3 weeks. And then I thought, well, I better go and see the doctor. And the doctor had a look at it and said, well, you better go and see the consultant. And I went to see the consultant and he said, well, you better go and have a biopsy, which resulted in that, one of those classic conversations when you go back to see the consultant again to say, Well, I'm afraid it's not very good news. It's not benign. So that was my first indication, and your world sort of slightly falls apart at the time, that I had throat cancer.
That must have been, well, it must have been awful. But I think it's one of those things, unless you're actually the patient, you don't really know how you would respond to that. So now we're going to fast forward to today. And the great thing is, you're saying you're in remission. And as far as you know, there's no sign of cancer. It has gone, which is a great thing. What role did cycling take in this? And I'm guessing it was quite a big role in your recovery, because this is why you contacted us, wasn't it? You wanted to share this story.
Yes, I did. I mean, I've always done a lot of cycling. You know, I have a mountain bike, and I'm lucky enough to live in an area where I can go out cycling from the house and through the forest. And I also have a road bike as well. So it's always been a big part of my life, trying to keep fit. And I always thought I was very fit. So when this happened, it was a bit of a shock. And the treatment, I mean, it's helped in two ways. Firstly, throughout the treatment, but also in the recovery afterwards. And the treatment is... it's pretty horrendous. First of all, because the cancer was in one of my tonsils, I had to have a tonsillectomy, which as an adult is no joke at all, I can tell you. And then the treatment itself really is 6 weeks of radiotherapy, 5 days a week, and once a week of chemotherapy. So that is really pretty horrendous, and it takes a lot out of you. So I did as much cycling as I could during that, going out in the mornings, just doing a few sort of gentle sprints up hills on my mountain bike. And that just helped to, in a way, to keep me sane, but also to keep, because what happens, the radiotherapy affects your throat and all the sort of the vessels and everything in your throat quite badly. And doing that exercise just helped to keep things working. So it was, it was a bit of a lifesaver as far as that was concerned. And then when you come to the end of the treatment, which was the 10th of January for me, I thought, well, this is fine. Good. I haven't done too badly. But 5 days later, I was then in hospital in Bury St. Edmunds, unable to swallow, on intravenous antibiotics. And eventually I came out about 5 or 6 days later, having been looked after incredibly well by the NHS there. And I came out sort of 2 stone lighter. And really with having lost a lot of muscle and everything else. And that was when the cycling really came into its own. And I used cycling virtually every day, gradually building it up very slowly. I mean, some days it was pretty hard to go out, but it was that really has helped enormously in my recovery, because doing that sort of exercise, it helps to rebuild the immune system, because obviously that's one of the side effects, particularly of the chemo, it destroys your immune system. It's been a huge part of my recovery.
Did your consultant encourage you to cycle?
They did. I think they weren't particularly used to some of their patients doing quite as much exercise as I was saying I was going to do. And they said, well, look, you must do what you feel you can do. If you can continue doing it, then it's likely to be hugely beneficial.
And actually, I know that's not uncommon, is it? Because the idea is that, you know, the idea is to keep exercising, but not to your full capacity. So even if you're somebody who never exercised, they'll encourage you to go out and walk around the block. But if you're a cyclist and you've been doing, say, 100 miles a week, then it's probably good for you to go out for like those sort of 45-minute cycle rides, isn't it? Just to keep yourself, because you are cutting back, aren't you? But you're keeping
and,
fit.
You know, I'd quite often, certainly at weekends, I'd do 25, 35 miles on the road bike, going out as well. Now that I stopped, because I felt actually that would probably take too much out of me, and it was the shorter, just, you know, getting the heart working, getting the breathing working, all that sort of thing. That's what was so helpful in sort of rebuilding my strength. And I went down to 12 stone, well, because eating was pretty difficult, and at the time obviously I couldn't do much exercise, and I'm now back up to about 12 and three quarters. So, you know, that's pretty good.
Thank you so much for sharing that story. It's really good of you. And hopefully anyone listening who finds himself or a loved one in the same position will take inspiration from that. And you mentioned
so this is one thing I would like to say about it.
Because, of course.
I mean, most of my treatment I had at Addenbrooke's and some of it at West Suffolk Hospital. But the support that I had from the NHS is really absolutely staggering. There's always somebody that I could ring up if I was concerned. There was a whole dietitian team. There was a whole sort of speech therapy team. That's as well as the consultants and the doctors and everything. I really cannot say enough about the quality of care I received from the NHS. It really was stunning.
It's always good to hear, isn't it? Now, before you go, because I know you're a very busy man, we would like you, if you don't mind, are you brave enough to saddle up to take part in our 3-minute spin mat wheel cycling questions relating to your cycling habits? The great thing about this is, Sir Christopher, you know the answers before me, so you're gonna get everyone right. Are you ready?
I'll do my best.
Of course. Okay, what happens is you shall hear the starters bleep, and once you hear the starters bleep, I shall be asking you question after question, and please just, you can elaborate as much as you want or abbreviate as much as you want. We'd also, it doesn't matter how many you answer or how many you don't, okay? So good. Here we go. Okay. Stand by.
Cambridge 105 Radio. Spin that wheel.
Here we go, Sir Christopher. What's your earliest memory of cycling?
Well, I think my earliest memory actually is when I used to have, I had a little tricycle when I was about 5 or 6. And it had a little sort of container on the back, and I used to go around the village collecting litter on my tricycle, and I can still remember doing that. That's probably my first cycling memory, I think.
You'll never live that one down now. You realise that, don't you? What type of cycling do you enjoy most now? You did mention that you presumably take off-road and on-road cycling on board.
Yes, I have an off-road bike, and I'm lucky enough to live near Brecknam Forest, so I go out into the forest. I absolutely love that. I do it. I've done it in the snow, I've done it in the rain, and I've done it in the wonderful sunshine we're getting at the moment. But then it's also quite flat around here, so I do go out on a road bike, and there's some pretty quiet roads. So it's a mixture, really, of road biking and mountain biking.
Now, think carefully before you answer the next question, because your consultant might be listening. How often do you cycle?
Ah, right. Well, I put it all on Strava, so I know exactly. But I suppose at the moment, I probably cycle 4 times a week. I do a workout 3 times a week, and then the other days I cycle. So I've got a little valley which I can coast down one side and then sprint up the other side, and I turn around and coast back down again and sprint up the other side. I'm working that up to 20, but I can do 16 at the moment.
Sounds very very energetic to me, I have to say. Of all the bicycles you currently own, which one is your favourite?
Well, I suppose it's got to be my road bike. About a few years ago, I bought this Moser 333 Dura-Ace carbon road bike. And before that, I've still got a sort of 1980 Peugeot road bike, which I used to think was fantastic. But then, of course, once I got the carbon Moser, that made me realize how wonderfully light and wonderful it is to ride. So, yeah, that's got to be my favorite bike.
And what would be the perfect dream cycle ride for you? And whereabouts in the world would it be? And with whom?
Oh, now, I'd like to do it with my wife, but she's really not very keen. Sorry, there's a car going past. She's really not very keen on cycling. So, but the place that I really love is the Falkland Islands, where I have been twice. So I'd love to have a mountain bike in the Falklands, and it would be somebody like Julia Roberts, but I'm not sure whether she really likes cycling anyway. So.
And your wife might have a word to say about
my that. really, but she's not very keen on the cycling.
What's the longest distance you have ever cycled in one go?
The longest distance, I did a ride from Newmarket, and that was 75 miles.
Thank you so much, Sir Christopher. We ran out of time, and thank you so much for sharing everything about us. And on behalf of all of us here at Cambridge 105 and behind the bike shed, wishing you a continued remission, and hopefully once this lockdown's out, perhaps you and I can meet up at a coffee shop somewhere between Cambridge and Newmarket. Take care. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Behind the Bike Shed on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Just to let you know, you can sponsor this or any other programme on Cambridge 105 Radio. Email sales@cambridge105.co.uk.
Thanks to Christopher and for your uplifting story. Kate, you see lots of patients, don't you, on a day in, day out basis. How important is exercise, and particularly cycling? Is that a particularly good exercise for people?
I think it suits some people really well. And as you say, exercise certainly is really important. I work with patients who have heart problems, and exercise is important for them in their cardiovascular health and our physical health. You can't take away the importance of it for your mental health as well, and certainly that's something that I think really comes across in many people's stories. I think cycling is a really useful activity. I mean, I love it. I'm a cyclist myself. We use it a lot in our assessment of patients. We can get people on static bikes because it's non-weight bearing. So people with other mobility issues can often still have a go on a bike. So it's quite a useful way to level the playing field in that respect, to assess people's hearts and to look after your hearts, even if you've got a knee problem or various things. And obviously there's going to be people who physically can't get on a bike, but it's a great exercise and can suit many people. And anything that gets you outdoors and into that fresh air and exploring our countryside, which is so beautiful at the moment.
It certainly is. Kate, I'm gonna hold you there. We're going to have a short break and we shall be back in 2 minutes.
Behind the Bike Shed on Cambridge 105 Radio. Behind the Bike Shed with Phil Minot on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Welcome back, and with me today is Councillor Aidan van der Wyre, who is a South Cambridgeshire District Councillor for Burwell and Barrington, Anna Williams, Communications and Community Officer for CamCycle, Kate Sanders, a member of Cam Cycling Club, and I think perhaps more importantly, a key NHS frontline worker, and Gabrielle, who is, of course, a regular, lifelong sporting cyclist and an everyday cyclist. He's got a bit of a beef at the moment about some of his temporary cycling lanes as well. Kate, before we went to the break, we're just chatting to you there, but more importantly, you travel into Cambridge, don't you, every day? And you were saying before we came on air, before we started to record, that you tend to travel into Babyroom and then you cycle to work, which is on the Addenbrookes campus. Is there a reason why you do that?
Yeah, I suppose it's twofold. But for me, it's actually to get out of the house, not out of the house, sort of have a bit of time outdoors before, rather than going straight from getting out of a car and walking into a building. I actually really appreciate a bit of time out in the fresh air, a little bit of time to clear my head, where I'm not listening to the radio or thinking about what's happened that day. I'm actually thinking about where I'm going or, you know, what I'm looking at. And it's almost like a little mindfulness exercise. So really good for me mentally to have a little bit of time on my bike. Unfortunately, I live a little bit too far away to cycle all the way in, but for me, that's a really nice compromise.
So tell us, I mean, current times. Now, your job, which is a
cardiac physiologist.
Okay. So you are frontline, presumably, on the wards?
Yeah, so some of the time, yeah.
And can we ask, have you been working with coronavirus patients as well?
Not particularly, to be honest. So obviously there are times when I cross paths with them, and the PPE is everywhere.
Because I've seen a brilliant portrait of you, an artistic portrait. Someone's drawn a portrait of you, haven't they, wearing your PPE. Yes. And it's really dramatic. So that's why I mentioned it.
There was one. Yeah, no, there is one of those NHS Heroes Portraits initiatives going on, and somebody very kindly did a portrait of me wearing all my PPE. So when I'm in, if I'm in sort of theatre environment, then we're wearing the full kit.
Does cycling help you then when you're away from work in current times? Because I mean, it's not a great place to be, is it? Because there's a lot of sadness about. Does cycling lift you?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that will be the same for everybody, whether you're in, you know, lockdown or, you know, this is a difficult time for everybody.
You see,
for me, I find it really helpful.
You see, I find it a real pain getting to Addenbrookes if you don't use public transport, you want to cycle, because there's nowhere to leave your bike securely. There might be for staff, but if you're a patient or you need to visit someone, it's almost like a no-go area for cyclists. I don't know. I mean, Anna, do your members comment on that, or is that just me being unlucky?
Yeah, no, I mean, definitely. I mean, I've found that myself as well. I've been to appointments with my small children, and partly it's some of the way the parking is set up. It's kind of, you know, winding in of kind of forest of bike and trying to tangle your way out. And we've also had various members say there's not really any parking for cargo bikes or adapted bikes, sort of anything out of the usual. So I mean, really need to see more sort of parking like that.
Yeah,
and I think the other thing that people are mentioning is some of the routes to Addenbrookes. For example, Red Cross Lane is quite a horrible route there, and that could be improved by sort of taking away the car parking, which I think the local residents would be really much in favour of.
Councillor Aylin, you want to get in on that?
Yeah, so the Greater Cambridge Partnerships are working with the various owners of the Addenbrookes campus, biomedical campus, and the other councils on getting a plan to improve the movement around the campus and into the campus, and then including things like the cycle parking. Obviously, there's a lot of expansion going on, and as people more and more people work on the campus, not just in Addenbrookes but in the other businesses, you need to make sure that cycling is really attractive to them. I mean, it's a complex site that's built up over the years with some really problematic areas. Bringing everybody together now, there's the opportunity to improve that, because the car parking is the roads are full going into Addenbrookes in the morning. There's not, you can't have any more cars, so we need bikes is one of the big solutions for that, along with the a new train station that we're going to get.
I was saying earlier, we said about a twofold reason. The second reason, of course, is via cycling, is because it is so difficult to get on site any other way.
Yeah, it is. And also I feel as someone who has to go, not with myself, someone else, been up to Addenbrookes a lot over the last 7 years, and sometimes you have to take a car for various reasons because they just, you know, anyway. But I sort of think it's a little bit of a con, because we've sort of been told there's an extra car park, but actually every new building which goes up, everyone's claiming that car park two is their car park, which I think as a councillor must be quite frustrating.
Yes, but we need to make sure that it's designed without. I mean, AstraZeneca, for example, is designing their building without a car park for their staff. They won't be getting. So they've been really supportive, for example, on getting the cycle routes in from the south. There's a representative of AstraZeneca on the Greater Cambridge Partnership to talk to us about the needs of that business and some of the other businesses as well. Cancer Research, for example.
Gabriel, you
want to join? I was just going to say, actually, parking, I think, is an issue everywhere in Cambridge and probably the rest of the country. I mean, we were cycling yesterday, Land Beach, and there was, well, Land Beach Green, and there was maybe 20 car parking spaces, and maybe there were three or four cars, and there were two cycling hoops, and they were busy, both of them. We couldn't park our bikes. Same thing today. We went to Wickham Fen. All the cycling racks were full. I mean, and I know that's private, but you know, it's a general issue everywhere you go. My wife says, if you ever speak to anybody, just tell them about the cycle parking. There is never any. In fact, at work, I'm complaining there is not enough cycle parking, and they need to put more. It's kind of like a generic theme all around everywhere, I think. And when I see messages from London, Leicester, north of the country, it's always similar. That's my experience anyway.
But all these things are important, aren't they? I mean, I'm guessing if we want to get everyone onto bikes and out of cars, or those who can, then every detail counts. You know, every missed detail is probably a missed cyclist.
When councils or when government is building roads, designing new areas for cars, they take all of that into account as a matter of course. So we've got to make sure that the same happens in parallel for cycles, so that all these problems, all the details get solved. Because if you don't solve all of them, then the weakest link breaks the chain.
That's a very positive high there, Councillor. Thank you. So while we're on a high, because I know Anna wants to join in. Anna, you did actually comment, didn't you, during that record, something which Kate said earlier you wanted to join in on.
Yes, yeah, so I just wanted to go back to what she was talking about parking and cycling in, because I think that's something we need to look at as well. I mean, the president of the AA has been calling for more emergency sort of park and cycle sites in the current times, and I think we can do that in Cambridge too. Local organisation Cambridge Assessment, they've a lot of their employees have switched to doing that since they moved to their new site on the Southern Busway. So I think there's a lot of other organisations that can help employees switch to park and cycling as well.
So, and council, you see, even the president of the Automobile Association wants us all to get on our bikes. So how can people, if people want to get be involved in the process in their neighbourhood, who should they contact? District council?
Yeah, absolutely. Great. So the best people are your local councillors, either your district or city councillor and your county councillor, who are able to input directly to the sort of gathering of schemes, assessment of schemes, but also CampCycle, I think, is has an absolutely vital role here. So joining CampCycle, giving your suggestions to CampCycle, and then they can then bring them, collate them, and bring them to the councils. But it's a really exciting opportunity that we've got to grasp.
I'm going to change subjects completely here. Kate, the cycling club, and I'm guessing there's been no club races this year at all, time trials?
No, nothing. It's all been solo riding for the last couple of months.
But you see, time trialing, which is where people set off 1 minute behind each other, that would be really good, wouldn't it, social distancing? Because you could go number one and people wouldn't be allowed presumably go past you.
Yeah, so
you could start
very
first
logical.
And finish first, couldn't you? Thinking of a way I could actually come first in a race.
Really logical, but British Cycling have actually said that we can't run them at the moment.
No,
we still have a meeting point in HQs and so on. So,
and presumably there's no club runs.
No.
But for anyone, so everyone's doing their own thing. It's very miserable, isn't it? This lockdown. It's not very social at all, is it?
There's been Zoom club runs. Zoom is it's forging the future.
Now, one good thing about it, and we spoke about it last week when Roxanne was here, Anna, your colleague, is the number of families who are out cycling. And I know, Gabrielle, your family has really taken to cycling, hasn't it? You've got two young teenage daughters?
Well, not teenagers yet, thankfully. So, yeah, so I think we've all cycled. I mean, we got bikes and we like cycling and, but we've been cycling more. I think since the lockdown started, I think I've driven my car twice, and it was once just because I heard it was bad just to leave the car staying still. So we've been cycling everywhere. In fact, we've been cycling almost every day, and we've been building up the miles and just going different places, seeing different scenery, and going different villages and experiencing what Cambridge has got to offer. But yes, it's been really good. And one of the comments that my youngest actually made the other day is like, I like going where there are no cars, which is quite telling, that a seven-year-old, unprompted. I mean, she might have heard me ranting a few times about cars on the roads, to be honest, but, she said it to me whilst we were cycling, so it was quite...
So Anna, I mean, is this a new thing? Do you think generally that younger generations really are wanting to look for less of a, more of a greener world, shall we say?
Well, I think... with fewer cars on the road, as there is now, it's that opportunity for people to kind of maybe try cycling if they were worried about safety before. Myself, I mean, I've got three young children as well. We've been cycling right into the city centre and on busy roads that we'd never normally cycle on. It's really nice. It just feels like they have access to their city in a way that they didn't have before. So it'll be great if we can just kind of keep some of the benefits of this period, the more open streets and the cleaner air. I think we need to look at how we can do that going forward.
To mention before we go, Burwell Bike Club, who this bank holiday weekend just gone, they have helped raise £650 for mental awareness charity, and they had a static cycle riding, social distancing it was done as, outside the co-op in Burwell, where they got stuck into the village community. So well done, Burwell Bike Club. Terry Dickinson, who is a member of Cambridge Cycling Club, he has set up his own 5-minute Velo YouTube channel. Terry Dickerson actually is a very accomplished engineer in his own right within the University of Cambridge. Anyway, he's produced this really good 5-minute Velo videos, and it's all about bicycle maintenance. So do check that one out as well. But can you believe it, though? We have literally run out of time again. So I really want to thank all my guests today. Thanks, Kate, so much for finding time to come and join us. And we're thinking of you as you're out there doing your stuff for NHS. Thank you to Anna, as always. Thank you to Councillor Aidan. I hope you'll be joining us again, sir.
Yeah, I'd love to.
Good, excellent. And we never have enough time to do this, but it's good to know there are lots of people. And ironically, we all whinge and moan at each other, but actually I think we're all going in the same direction to get cycling infrastructure in Cambridgeshire. And of course, a special thank you to Gabrielle. Thank you so much, sir, for coming out. It's a lovely bit of Lego behind you there as well.
Yeah, I did say.
And hopefully you can join us again soon as well. And our guest on a bike this week, Sir Christopher Hayworth, thank you so much. And next week, alongside all the latest cycling news, we have a former Chief Constable of Cambridgeshire playing spin mat wheel and telling us all about their cycling habits.
Behind the Bike Shed on Cambridge 105 Radio.
And if you have a cycling-related story you would like to share with us, then please do. You can get in contact via our Facebook page, which is Behind the Bike Shed on Cambridge 105 Radio. No abbreviation. You have to write all the words out there. That will keep you busy. You've been listening to Behind the Bike Shed, a Barking Hound production for Cambridge 105 Radio. The voice of Spin Mat Wheel was Tony Barnfield. Thank you, Lucy, as well, for your voiceovers. I'm Phil Minot, and until next time, safe cycling. Coming up very soon here on Cambridge 105, if you're listening on Thursday, it's O'Reilly Country with Brian O'Reilly.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Bike Shed. Just to let you know, you can sponsor this programme on Cambridge 105 Radio. Email sales@cambridge105.co.uk.